friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Manu Ginobili, who announced his retirement after a 23-year professional basketball career. Now, when it comes to sports stars from Argentina, Manu is not on the level of football phenom Lionel Messi, but he gets my vote as the greatest basketball player the country has produced. In 2004 in Athens, Argentina won its first and only Olympic gold medal in basketball, and Ginobili was named the tournament's most valuable player. In the National Basketball Association, Manu won four titles with the San Antonio Spurs. Those four titles are the most of any international player in NBA history, an honor Ginobili shares with his longtime Spurs teammate Tony Parker. And a quick note about the 36-year-old Parker, who has represented France in international competition. After 17 seasons with San Antonio, Parker signed last month with the Charlotte Hornets, the club owned by NBA great Michael Jordan. But let's get back to 41-year-old Manu Ginobili. He and Hall of Famer Bill Bradley are the only players in basketball history to have won an NBA title, a EuroLeague title, and an Olympic gold medal. One of Manu's former teammates, Steve Kerr, who is now the head coach of the NBA champion Golden State Warriors, had this to say about Ginobili, and I quote, "He had this perfect balance to the way he played. Confidence, humility, fearlessness, competitiveness, and joy." Turning to women's professional basketball, the WNBA semifinals continue later Tuesday night with games in Atlanta, Georgia, and Seattle, Washington. The Atlanta Dream will host the Washington Mystics in Game 2 of their best-of-five series. The Mystics won the opener 87-84. And the top-seeded Seattle Storm, they're at home against the Phoenix Mercury. Seattle was victorious in Game 1, winning 91-87. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Tennis news now on the VOA. It's day two at the U.S. Open tournament in New York, and the year's final Grand Slam event is generating excitement among fans. Joining us once again is my Voice of America colleague, Gwen Ooten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The temperature was hot, the air was humid, and like the weather, the energy was high in New York City. Eager fans kicked off Monday's opening day, ready to celebrate the tournament's 50th anniversary. Well, some just came to party, but others came to see some good tennis.
It's really cool, but I just really want to see, like, every tennis player I can.
Just the whole atmosphere. It's festive. It's fun. Walking around. Having my signature cocktail. It's just good energy here.
Just see some good matches. Have a good time. Have some beer.
The vibe is awesome. Beautiful. People. The atmosphere, fantastic.
And I'd love to see the Williams sisters, of course. I don't know, really, like, I love all of them, so I'm happy to just see all the great athletes.
Well, those fans saw some great opening day tennis, including a stunning upset on the women's side. On Monday, Sunny mentioned that world number one Simona Halep became the first top seed in history to lose an opening match at this event. Halep was defeated in straight sets to unseeded Estonian Kaia Kanepi. Afterwards, Halep admitted first-round jitters got the best of her.
I think every player is struggling a little bit in the first round. It's always about the nerves. Even when you are there in the top, you feel the same nerves. You are human, so it's the same thing. For me, it's more difficult in the first rounds because I'm more emotional, and that's why I need a good start. It's nothing. It's not a drama, but it's tough.
This is the second consecutive year Halep has exited the tournament in the first round, and she admitted the U.S. Open is a tough event.
I never play my best tennis here, even if I did quarterfinals, semifinals. So always I feel like my game is not in the best at the best level, but always I fought for every match. So today I did also, but didn't go my way, just like that.
Staying on the women's side, defending champion Sloane Stephens made her return to Flushing Meadows with a straight-set victory over 80th-ranked Evgenia Rodina of Russia. Afterwards, Sloane said she's happy to be moving through.
It's good to get through the first day. Obviously, first round of Grand Slam is always super tough. So, especially as defending champion, I'm just super excited to get the tournament going.
The Williams sisters bridged the afternoon and evening sessions on Monday. First, 16-seed Venus claimed a three-set victory over Svetlana Kuznetsova of Russia. And while she has advanced to the second round, Venus says every match is a challenge.
Yeah, there are no easy matches. Everyone's playing well. The higher you rank, the more that people come for you. So it's just a chance for them to just hit out.
And Venus says she's staying focused in front of the New York crowd.
It's wonderful to have people on your side, but you can't go out there and you have to do it for yourself as well. So if the crowd is with you, it's wonderful to be able to do it for them too.
The court was still steamy and the moon was full when Serena blazed through her first round match against first-time opponent Magda Linette of Poland. Serena won in straight sets 6-4, 6-0. She spoke about the match following her win.
You know, I thought it was a good match. It was a great first round match. I mean, Magda plays, she's such a fighter and she's a very hard worker. I've seen her at Patrick's Academy a few times, so I kind of knew what to expect going tonight. So that was a little bit of a relief to know a little bit what to expect. But I think overall I had a little shaky start, but I got into it.
And she said coming back to the U.S. Open at this point in her career hasn't been easy.
It's not easy to get to any point in my career, and this hasn't been that easy either. But the highs have been great. The lows have been, you know, like your normal lows, and that's kind of how it is. You have to get through all those moments and to live the next.
The sisters are only one victory away from facing each other in the third round. Moving on to the men's side, unseeded Stan Wawrinka of Switzerland defeated 8th-seed Grigor Dimitrov of Bulgaria. Andy Murray of Britain defeated Australia's James Duckworth in his first Grand Slam match after undergoing hip surgery. And John Isner defeated fellow American Bradley Klon in straight sets. After the match, Isner said he's feeling good.
Physically, I really do feel the best I think I've ever felt. So at 33, that's very encouraging. I feel fit, healthy, strong, all those things. Still eager, and you put all that together, it's a good recipe.
Argentine Juan Martín Del Potro is through to the second round after his win over American Donald Young. And defending champion Rafael Nadal and fellow Spaniard David Ferrer fought through oppressive humidity in a late evening match. The two players were midway through the second set when Ferrer, in obvious discomfort, was forced to quit. Ferrer said he had taken an injection prior to the match and received treatment on the sidelines before he ultimately made the decision to retire in his final appearance at a Grand Slam. Federer has been a formidable opponent for Nadal. They faced each other in the 2013 French Open final. Nadal went on to win that title. And after Monday's match, Nadal paid tribute to Federer and expressed his sadness over his finish. Nadal called him one of his closest friends on the tour and said they faced many amazing moments together. Their match ended with Nadal up one set and a final score of 6-3, 3-4. More tennis news to come. I'll hand it back over to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. I'm Sonny Young. And you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The International Association of Athletics Federations recently created a new department, IAAF Heritage, to better document the sport's history. Chris Turner is the director of the department. The energetic Andy Edwards asked him about the concept behind IAAF Heritage.
Basically, athletics, and particularly the IAAF, has not been the greatest preserver of our past. You look at a lot of sports, they've got museums, they very much interact and project their sport through their past names. You think of the Olympic history, and I was born in 64, I grew up in the 70s, so for me, you take Spitz out of it, you say take Corbett and maybe Kamenetch. The rest of their history is athletics. The Olympic movement is very good at promoting itself from that, but athletics has done nothing really. So the initial concept is to try and find ways, maybe it's a museum, maybe it's travelling exhibitions, to use our past to promote our future effectively.
Have you been going around current athletes and athletes now retired asking for memorabilia, you know, your shoes, your kit, this is what you wore when you won the gold?
We have had one little dress rehearsal at this because in 2012 we had our centenary and I was being the total idiot of this this sport, the real anorak as we say in England. I was seconded for a whole year to put on the centenary celebrations, which included a two-month exhibition in the Olympic Museum in Barcelona. And there, and you're exactly right, I basically called in all my contacts, all the great athletes of the past, the agents I've been working with in communications. And you're quite right, I've been in this for quite a long time now. I was working out certainly way over a quarter of a century, pulling in all those contacts. And most of these people have their medals and their vests and their spikes in their spare bedroom, underneath a bed. They want to show it to the world. They want to have that opportunity. So that the people, they just want to loan things to us.
The headquarters of the IAAF is in Monaco. Is the plan to have a museum there, or will there be any possibility for, I mean, it strikes me, a kind of little tour, like when you have a championship coming to a city, a chance to see at least a mobile exhibition of the IAAF and Athletics World Heritage?
The project, which I've amazingly convinced our council, is a four-year project which will end with a museum in Monte Carlo. And the principality have basically intimated they would offer us a building for that. They're very interested. They've got a very good museum network anyway. But what struck me really was in 2016 we had our Congress in Monaco. Now, the IAAF has been in Monaco, moving from London, in 1994. In that period, we worked out about 70% of the federations, unless they had a member on our council or on a commission, have never once visited Monte Carlo. So I thought we must seem very, very aloof to somebody in Papua New Guinea, somebody, I don't know, in Belarus, who can never actually get to Monaco. So, yeah, we want this lovely museum there, but you're quite right, we want to take our heritage to our member federations, to area events, to IAAF events. It's no good us just sitting back in Monaco and say, hey, come in 20 years' time and see this. So it's a dual purpose, physical museum, prestige, but also take those our past to our members.
I think it's fair to say in recent years there's a lot of talk about presentation of athletics. I mean, everybody agrees, I feel, that football is the number one sport in terms of interest, spectator appeal, media coverage. So all the other sports, including even the number one in Olympic sport, athletics, feels under pressure. So could this also be a way of, it may not be the main way, but of showing the public, hey, this is a sport, not just if you go to see a track meeting now, but it's got background.
Yeah, very much so. You know, it's also about, we're talking about encouraging the young people to engage with your sport. Back in 72, as an eight-year-old, I sat on the couch and watched the Olympics with my brothers. In 72, unless I'd been watching the Olympics or gone out on my bike or playing the street, there were no other distractions. We now have generations who have so many other possibilities of what they're going to do in their life. So this is part to engage, to get that interest in our sport, to actually say, you've been watching Usain Bolt. Well, before Usain Bolt, there was Carl Lewis. Before that, there was Harrison Dillard or Jesse Owens. And giving that connection, but also talking about the backstories. You know, that's a very well-used phrase now, but you know the stories of some of our great talents, our great legends, are quite extraordinary. And I think if you're going to inspire, and that's another well-used phrase, but if you're going to inspire people to be interested in your sport, something which is seen as very traditional, hasn't really changed very much, that's the way of doing it. And heritage's main purpose is that.
Well, I think everybody, not just media, but fans, and perhaps people who just see athletics every 4 years and the Olympics will think this is a really interesting project. Chris Turner, we wish you and the IWF Heritage all the best for the launch and for the future. Be watching it with great interest. Thanks very much, Chris.
Thanks very much, Andy.
And thanks to the energetic Andy Edwards for that interview with Chris Turner of the IAAF. And Andy and Chris spoke in Birmingham, England. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In African football news, the Democratic Republic of Congo's head coach, Florent Ibenge, has named a 26-man team for next week's 2019 Africa Cup of Nations qualifier in Liberia. Coach Ibenge included West Ham defender Arthur Masuaku, who could possibly make his national team debut against Liberia. The 20-year-old Masuaku was born in Lille, France, and he played for France at the youth levels. However, Arthur switched his allegiance to the DRC in June 2017. Also in June 2017, the Leopards of the Democratic Republic of Congo began their Nations Cup qualifying campaign with a 3-1 victory over neighbor Congo Brazzaville in Kinshasa. Two of the DRC's goals in that match came from China-based striker Cedric Bakambu. Despite his good form in China, where Cedric has scored 13 goals in 15 appearances for Beijing Guoan, Bakambu was not named to the team that will play Liberia. Also left out was veteran striker Dumasi Mbokani, who just signed a 1-year contract with the Belgian club Royal Antwerp. The 32-year-old Mbokani is returning to Belgium 5 years after leaving Anderlecht for the Ukrainian club Dynamo Kiev. Mbokani says, and I quote, "I feel excited to be back here, and I want to make a huge contribution here." I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. More African football news. The League Management Company, or LMC, the organization that runs the Nigerian Professional Football League, is proposing matches resume on September 2nd and end on October 15th. The Nigerian League was suspended because of the World Cup in Russia, and later the crisis that rocked the leadership of the Nigeria Football Federation. For reaction to the proposed dates, reporter Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the media officer of the Mountain of Fire Ministry Football Club of Lagos, Olawale Quadri.
LMC are just trying to look for a way, you know, to kick off the league. I mean, to restart the league due to the crisis we had in the NFL. But then I still feel that fine, they are trying to do something that is very, very important. But then there are a lot of things we need to put into consideration. Because, I mean, according to what we heard, though it's not official, because there has not been any letter to that effect from the LMC. But from what we heard, from rumors that the league may likely resume on the 2nd of September. Well, for me, I think it will be very, very hectic for the players. Not only the players. Remember that the officials too, they'll be traveling with the team. Coaches, you know, other backroom staffs will be going with the team. And again, we have to consider a lot of things because traveling from Lagos to Maiduguri would take like probably 4 days through and through. Then if you have to play 3 games in a week, then it means that 4 days has gone out of 7 days. How will you play the 3 games? To them, it might be a realistic target, but for me, I think it's unrealistic.
There are suggestions by stakeholders that instead of restarting the league, the LMC and the Nigerian Football Federation should declare the first, second, and third clubs on the league log winners of the league and restart a new league. What's your take on this?
What you just said now is my own suggestion as well. I believe that we can do that. I think at some point in Mali, even if not, I think it still continues up to now. They were having crises in their league, and then those that won the league before, talking about Joliba and AS Real Bamako, I mean, those that came first, second, and third, they represented them on the continent. So I think we too, we can do the same thing. We too, we had crises, and now there's nothing we can do. So we can pick the first, second, and third, you know, to represent us. But then the question people have been asking is, what about those playing in the NNL? Won't they come to, I mean, wouldn't get promotion to the MPFL? We can still do it. There's a room for that. They will continue with their league. They will end their league anytime they want to end their league. Then they will wait for us. If we start now, by May or June next year, we will end this our league. Then whoever gains promotion from there will join us. Then whoever drop from here will join them in the National League. And then again, another advantage that will give to the league is we will be able to meet up with the European dates. You know, by that time, too, most of the European side will be rounding off with their league. And I think we can do that as well.
What if the NFF and the LMC insist that the new date for the league should hold? What will be the consequences on the clubs, of which you represent one of them?
Well, number one, the player may not give in their best. And at the end of the day, may likely not get worldy champions because a player that will play three games in a week, fatigue with setting, a lot of things with setting, that player you can't expect to get the best from the players. Then that is one. Then secondly, finances, because like MFM, there is a budget we use in running our football team. And I think other clubs too, they have budgets. Now what this means is, in a week, the budget for that has been set, so that has been put in place for like probably a month, will not be enough for these teams to run. And again, we have to consider a fact. Most of the clubs we have in the MPFL, they are owned by the government. 2019 is an election year. The government now, their major focus, I believe, would be on the election. Now, releasing funds to these teams would be a difficult one for the government clubs. Now, we that we are private clubs, we don't really have much problem with that. In these government-owned clubs, they may suffer, they may have issues with finance. So, and I think that is another big problem that is waiting for us if we start by that time that the LMC or they said they've proposed.
That's Olawale Quadri, the media officer of the Mountain of Fire Ministry Football Club, and he spoke with reporter Iron Mike Mbonye in Lagos, Nigeria. I encourage our VOA listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. If you go to my Facebook page, you'll see a video of some of Manu Ginobili's highlights. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the 41-year-old Manu is retiring after a 23-year professional basketball career. And that wraps up the August 28th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nashwan Kali. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Many believers of different faiths have suffered grievously at the hands of ISIS, including Muslims, Christians, Druze, and others, said Vice President Mike Pence at the Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom. But perhaps no faith community has been so systematically and cruelly targeted by ISIS as the Yazidis. 4 years ago, ISIS entered the Sinjar region of Iraq, killing or kidnapping many Yazidi men, women, and children. Nadia Murad, who spoke at the ministerial, said that in her village, ISIS slaughtered more than 600 Yazidi men and boys, including six of Nadia's brothers and stepbrothers. Then they kidnapped Nadia and all the young women and subjugated them to the most degrading form of human slavery. She was only able to escape because her captor left a door unlocked, and the neighboring family hid her until she could be smuggled to safety. Many Yazidi girls weren't so lucky. Thousands remain missing to this day or remain in ISIS captivity. The suffering of the Yazidi people has sickened the American people and mobilized the United States to action. Ensuring that ISIS is defeated remains an urgent priority for the Trump administration, and the U.S.-led global coalition to defeat ISIS will not stop until this enemy has been eliminated. Thanks to these efforts, ISIS's so-called caliphates in Iraq and Syria have collapsed, and we will not rest or relent until ISIS is driven from the face of the earth, declared Vice President Pence. Retaking territory is only half the battle. That's why the United States has already devoted more than $110 million to support persecuted religious communities across the Middle East. Vice President Pence announced that the United States will establish the Genocide Recovery and Persecution Response Program. Under this new program, the State Department and the U.S. Agency for International Development will closely partner with local faith and community leaders to deliver aid to persecuted communities, beginning in Iraq. The United States is also launching a new International Religious Freedom Fund that will leverage our resources, together with funds from other nations, to support those who fight for religious freedom and suffer from religious persecution. Together, said Vice President Pence, we will champion the cause of liberty as never before, and I believe that our combined leadership will make a difference for freedom of faith for generations to come.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Africa, I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, pressure mounts on Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni over the beating and detention of music star Bobi Wine. And we'll discuss the legacy of Kofi Annan on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Come celebrate the 60th birthday of legendary King of Pop, Michael Jackson, on Wednesday, August 29th, with a very special edition of Border Crossings. Join Larry London as he takes you back through time with a full hour of Michael Jackson's greatest hits. With a career spanning over 40 years, Michael Jackson gave us plenty of songs to choose from. Don't miss Border Crossings on Wednesday, August 29th at 1500 Universal, as we pay tribute to one of the greatest pop stars of all time.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.